sitting at my table.
Dignity.
Security.
Freedom.
Freedom.
Respect.
Justice.
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 Just this.
Just this.
Equality.
Equality.
Remedy. And protection.
Fairness.
Fair trial.
Privacy.
Right.
Work.
Peace.
Movement.
Movement.
This is my mistake, let me make it good. I raised the wall, and I will be the one to knock it down.
Asylum.
Identity.
Family.
Home.
Conscience.
Expression.
Expression.
Expression,
expression,
participation,
democracy,
welfare,
work,
work,
leisure,
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 health,
education,
progress,
culture,
human rights,
Charter Dana,
solidarity,
responsibility.
Fill in the mortar. I raise the wall, and I'm the only one. I will be the one to knock it down.
Good afternoon to all of our listeners on CJTR Community Radio at 91.3 FM and over the internet at cjtr.ca. We can also be heard on SaskTel Max at channel 806 and Access Communications Digital Service at channel 700. Wherever you are, welcome to Human Rights Radio, hosted weekly by Amnesty International volunteers, who are a worldwide movement of people dedicated to the promotion of human rights and the safety of all human beings. We are building a world in which every person enjoys the rights included in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other human rights standards. Our theme song is titled 30 Words, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, written and performed by REM, and a collection of musicians from around the world. My name is Jim Hutchings. With me today is my co-host Gordon Barnes and our special guest, Gail Bowen. We're going to talk about Freedom to Read Week as well as catch up with what Gail has been doing. But first, I'd just like to, for those of you who don't are not familiar with what Gail is about, Gail is has a number of things that she's done, and I've been equipped with a bit of a biography.
Oh, please don't go through all of it. Just generally, I hang about.
Okay. I promise I won't read it all because we don't have time.
Yeah.
But anyway, for 22 years, Gail was a member of the English Department of First Nations University of Canada. For six of those years, she served as department head. In addition to introductory courses, she taught creative writing, expository writing, Canadian literature, children's literature, Aboriginal drama, and Aboriginal fiction. But in addition to teaching, she's actually done a considerable amount of writing. And Gail's best-known mystery series features Joanne Kilborn, a university professor, sometime political columnist, and a wife, mother, and grandmother. The first six books in the Kilborn series, Deadly Appearances in 1990, Murder at the Mendel in 1991, The Wandering Soul Murders 1992. How many we got here, Gail?
This is the 25th year for the Joanne Kilborn series.
Wow.
And the 15th book will be published on March 3rd. It's the publication date. So, yeah.
Wow. So you just... The inspiration just keeps coming.
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with putting my bum on the chair, you know, every day. Yeah.
Wow. And you've had four plays produced at the Globe?
Yeah. And one of the... My Peter Pan was at Manitoba Theatre for Young People this Christmas. So
wonderful.
With Fred Penner playing Captain Hook, which was pretty cool, too.
Wow. and
no, mostly mostly what I am is a grandmother and a mother, and I am just one really hot Monopoly player. I play every single day with my 9-year-old grandson.
I'll just finish up here. You were Regina Public Library's writer in residence for 2013-2014.
Right. True.
Okay. All right. So we said we were going to talk about Freedom to Read Week. So what's that all about?
Well, they have a mission statement, and I think this is a good place to start. It says, Freedom to Read Week is an annual event that encourages Canadians to think about and reaffirm their commitment to intellectual freedom, which is guaranteed them under the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. And really, it's one of those things where I think perhaps we're not always as aware as we might be of the numbers of challenges that come to books that we may wish to read, and Gordon and I will talk about that. But so I think what the part that we're involved in is something called the Banned Books Cafe. And it's we will be reading from books that have been challenged. There'll be five of us, I think, reading, five or six. Anyway, a number of us will be reading from books that have been challenged. But also, I think, mostly just talking about the grounds on which books are challenged and what a serious outcome it can be for the community and for young people and for writers. And I mean, because you really are putting a piece of duct tape over their mouths.
Sure, Yeah, I'm just thinking. Just recently, there are people that are protesting 50 Shades of Grey.
Yeah,
and
well, they could do that on the grounds of good taste.
Yeah, they could. Sure,
it's just sort of not a very. But I mean, nobody wants to have it banned. I mean, I guess that's the thing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think we all agree it's not a literary masterpiece.
No.
Yeah.
No, but you know, the other thing too is it's, you know, Lawrence Hill said something good. His book, The Book of Negroes. In the States, they were really, he got some real hate mail saying, well, they wouldn't read a book that had the word Negroes in it. And he got this from, from American black people. And but the whole thing is the Book of Negroes was a historical document. It it was key to what he was doing.
Right.
And, but anyway, and he stood up to this, confrontation. But he said, burning books is designed to intimidate people. It underestimates the intelligence of readers, stifles dialogue, and insults those who cherish the freedom to read and write. I think that's a good place to.
Right.
Gordon, are you with us today at all? Or?
Oh, yeah. And it's a great, as you say, conversation to have, Gail, in terms of the significance around when books are challenged and also when writers are challenged themselves and many times imprisoned. That's an area of work that Amnesty International is very involved with. You know, currently we're thinking about people like Mohamed Fahmy and his situation where he's a journalist who's been imprisoned for over 400 days in Egypt. Also Raif Badawi, who's in Saudi Arabia, who is a blogger, a writer, who has been sentenced to over 1,000 lashes. So, you know, there's the extension of when books are, as you say, challenged or banned, and then what might happen to writers that are even more serious in terms of consequences.
Oh, yeah, and Penn International is so involved in that. I have just, you know, a little bit here on Penn, and just because I'm a writer, because I have often... myself been doing a reading where there will be an empty chair on the stage, and that will be for, and with the photo and the name of a writer who is imprisoned, and it's a very powerful moment for all of us, I think, to realize that, I mean, it is so easy for us just to walk in and read what we want, and people can walk out, but that is not an option for someone. At any rate, Penn is a writer's group that was formed to promote and protect literature in a variety of ways, including by opposing restraints on freedom of expression and working to promote literacy itself and to act as a powerful voice on behalf of writers harassed, imprisoned, and sometimes killed for their views. And, you know, as I said, I have often participated in Penn readings, and it is, it's a... you know, it's an amazing thing when you see that happen. You know, I mean, like Dr. Zhivago by Boris Pasternak. I mean, he couldn't accept the Nobel Prize for that. And just, you know, just and those things are among us.
And, you know, it extends, you know, where the discussion is around banned books or challenged books and writers, but this kind of attack on freedom extends to other individuals who, for example, who are visual artists and express their views in other ways,
or
too.
Or cartoonists.
That's right, yeah. And with very tragic consequences many times. So, you know, it's a really important conversation that we're having today, and I'm so glad that you're able to be part of the discussion, Gail. And maybe what you might do is just share with the people who are listening to the program a little bit of detail in terms of the Banned Books Cafe that's going to be happening on February 25th, if you'd like.
Yeah, on Wednesday night, and it's going to be a terrific evening. There will be. I'll just read you who will be reading and what they will be reading. Jill will be reading. She's the CBC news anchor, and I don't have her last name here, but I know it as well as my own Jill. Anyway,
isn't Morgan?
Yes, Jill Morgan. Right. Yeah, I do. Yeah. Anyway, thank you. Jill will be reading from Bridge to Terabithia by Catherine Patterson. That's a children's book. Our young people's book that has been banned or challenged. Kelly Jo Burke will be reading from The Wars, Timothy Findlay's book about the First World War. And I think I've taught The Wars. It's a wonderful book. The reason, and it describes heartbreaking detail what those young men went through, but the reason it is banned is because there's homosexuality. And that, I mean, not the obscenity of war, you know, is nothing. It's just because two men fall in love, you know. And Ed Willett will be reading from The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, and Gord's reading from Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, how do you say it? Anyway, banned by J.K. Rowling. And I'm reading from The Handmaid's Tale by Margaret Atwood. And I think last year we did it, and it was really, we really had a good discussion afterwards. You know, what pleases me, I think, about living in Saskatchewan is I also did a call-in radio show about this. And I expected at the beginning, and the question was, should a book, should the book, a book ever be banned? And I did it with my friend Steph Langenegger, and I, excuse me, I think both of us were expecting that we would surely get some people saying yes if it doesn't do this. Right. And we didn't get one in an hour, we didn't get one single call that said that any book should be banned. I mean, we talked obviously about the legal structures, you know, about hate literature, and things like that. But there was, the diversity of people who called in. I mean, they were all over the map as far as demographic is concerned. But the general sense was that you really, if you're, you know, the concern about having, you know, that it was has been expressed about, well, The Handmaid's Tale that I'm going to read from, I wrote this down because it just seems such a weird thing to know, but anyway, it is the number 37 on the American Library Association's 100 list of most banned books. And I really liked one thing I read about this. I mean, it continues to be challenged a lot because a lot of high schools teach it, and we can talk about that in a bit, but I liked what somebody at the University of Toronto said, because someone had approached the school board and said, a 17-year-old shouldn't be reading about this. It's a dystopia where women are deprived of their rights totally, and there's a very right-wing Christian sort of orthodoxy that's imposed on them. Mm-hmm. But the fellow who responded said, you know, Shakespeare wasn't written for 17-year-olds either, and yet we are all the richer for having studied Shakespeare or having read Margaret Atwood or having read something. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not to say that someone is not able to comprehend something is to minimize your students and to deprive them of a kind of a depth of awareness. So, yeah, so anyway, that we're all going to be reading with things that reading from things that have caused caused confrontations again, and we'll talk about, I think, how they resolve themselves, or if they ever did.
I'm just curious how you'd resolve somebody like Ernst Zundel.
Yes. Yeah, I know.
You know, there's a problem.
A hater. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, there are laws. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's what we have to rely on. You know, I mean, and, you know, and the other thing too is, I think you really do have to accept the fact that, you know, well, I seem to have a quote for everything today, but that's because I'm a teacher. But anyway, he said, this is from Tommy Douglas, and he says, freedom, like peace, is indivisible. I must protect my neighbor's rights in order to safeguard my own. And, yeah, and as always, he hits the nail on the head, I think.
Exactly.
You know, the interesting process for me, because I was going through a little bit of research trying to decide what I might read at the Freedom to Read Week Banned Books Cafe night on February 25th, is I was thinking about, you know, interesting options to share with people that night. One of the first ones was a book, it's called The Shepherd's Granddaughter. It's a book, really interesting book. It's by Anne Laurel Carter, and published in 2008. It's actually about one of the most, it's a novel, about one of the most hotly disputed pieces of land on earth. And Anne Carter tells the story of one girl and her family, and whose homes and way of life were, you know, impacted and threatened, including their very ancient olive trees. It's the piece of earth, obviously, would be in the occupied territories where Palestinian people live. And the book was challenged in 2010 in Ontario by the B'nai B'rith, the Jewish advocacy group. It called for the removal of that book. It said that it wasn't a fair representation of what was going on in terms of that area. And, you know, they went through the process of deciding whether they should keep it in the system. There is a copy of that book in the Regina Public Library. They don't have a lot of copies, unfortunately, mm-hmm. but, it's a good demonstration of something where, you know, either for large reasons, because this is obviously a large area of discussion in terms of what's going on in Israel and the occupied territories, a book was challenged, and in another case, another book that I'll refer to that I am going to be reading from, mm-hmm. I would describe as something, a relatively small challenge to the book, but and it didn't have this particularly significant consequences, but it's worth mentioning as well. But Gail, you're going to be reading from A Handmaid's Tale. Did you want to share a little bit about why you picked that particular one? You've kind of talked about it a bit, but did you want to go there for?
Sure, I'd be happy to. I think the thing that really struck me. Well, I'll just read a little very brief description of what it's about. It is a dystopian novel, as I said, and it was published in 1985, and it takes place in the near future, which I think would take us almost to exactly where we are right now. It's set in the near future in a totalitarian Christian theocracy, which has overthrown the United States government. It explores themes of women in subjugation and the various means by which they gain agency. And it was... I've taught it before. It is because I think it was... Now, 1985, that was very much... at a time when two things were going on, I think, certainly the women's movement, but a very strong, I think from the Christian right, a very strong opposition to that, and really saying that these kinds of things that were that women were wanting or calling for were wrong, and they were against biblical precedent, and so Margaret Atwood takes that as her base. I like teaching it because, first of all, because it's a very compelling story. It is told by a woman named Alfred, and she is a handmaiden, and basically what that means, their world has been so corrupted by pollutants and and just pretty much what we're doing ourselves right now, you know, just and just ruining the environment. And so many people are sterile, and not many children can be brought into the world. And so the any woman who has previously borne a child becomes a handmaiden, and she is has sex, and that's the part I'm going to read, the ceremony that she has once, you know, every 2 weeks or whatever, with the commodore, or the commander, one of the important men in the system, and I think what struck me when I teach it is how easy it is to have your rights taken away. Mm-hmm. They do it here economically. And you think about it as a woman, I think all of a sudden I go and my bank card doesn't work, my credit card. And that's exactly what happens to her. Right. She just goes and all of a sudden she is a non-person. And the state can tell her what to do. And I had one summer when I taught this, it's in my summer school classes. I always try to do something a little bit more fun and inventive for them. So I allowed, you know, some of them wrote music to go with their with their report or wrote, you know, something else. One of my students, the handmaids wear red nuns outfits. They're just like full nun outfit, but red. And she made one, and she was going to read it while she gave her report, or wear it while she gave her report, and she couldn't put it on. I mean, she made it, she said she started to put it on, and she just felt the oppression that those women felt, and it was a really such a powerful moment for her and for all of us, I think. Mm-hmm. And so I thought that maybe, I mean, this is 20 years ago, but it still speaks to so much. And it's not just about women. It's about oppression. Mm-hmm. You know, it's about choosing there's a group that will be oppressed, and we can do it so easily, you know, and I think, so I mean, it's not, I mean, in this particular case, it is women, but there are so many other areas. Mm-hmm. So that's why I chose mine.
And Margaret Atwood, I mean, what a celebrated author to be. And it's going to be exciting for people attending that particular evening, because you're going to be reading from Margaret Atwood. I mean, that's fabulous. I'm really glad that you're picked that.
Thank you. Well, the passage is, do you want me to read the
passage? Sure, that'd be great.
Quite brief. It's quite brief. And this is just takes the, this is the ceremony. Let's see now. Yeah. And this is, and it's just, I mean, it is such a mockery almost of, and I mean, it is sex, but it's not sex. It is, the whole idea is procreation. If a woman cannot get pregnant within 2 years, she's sent to another commodore, and if that doesn't work out, then she can be sent to a place where they shovel waste, you know, like a nuclear waste and things like that. So she'll die a terrible death. Not many of the children born are born healthy, and the ones who aren't are called shredders if they're born with some sort of deformity. And they obviously, the fact that they're called shredders says it all. Okay, so this is offered. Now, the ceremony goes as usual. I lie on my back, fully clothed, except for the healthy white cotton with underdrawers. What I could see if I were to open my eyes would be the large white canopy of Serena Joy's outsized colonial-style four-poster bed, suspended like a sagging cloud above us, a cloud sprigged with tiny drops of silver rain, which, if you looked at them closely, would turn out to be four-petaled flowers. I would not see the carpet, which is white, or the sprigged curtains and skirted dressing table with its silver-backed brush and mirror set. Only the canopy, which manages to suggest at one and the same time, by the gauziness of its fabric and its heavy, heavy downward curve, both ethereality and matter. Or the sail of a ship. Big-bellied sails, they used to say in poems, bellying, propelled forward by a swollen belly. A mist of lily of the valley surrounds us, chilly, crisp, almost. It's not warm in this room. Above me, toward the head of the bed, Serena Joy is arranged, outspread. Now, Serena Joy is the wife of the commodore, so she must always be present at these ceremonies. Her legs are apart. I lie between them, my head on her stomach, her pubic bone under the base of my skull, her thighs on either side of me. She, too, is fully clothed. My arms are raised. She holds my hands, each of mine in each of hers. This is supposed to signify that we are one flesh, one being. What it really means is that she is in control of the process and thus of the product, if any. The rings of her left hand cut into my fingers. It may or may not be revenge. My red skirt is hitched up to my waist, though no higher. Below it, the commander is fucking. What he is fucking is the lower part of my body. I do not say making love, because that is not what he's doing. Copulating two would be inaccurate, because it would imply two people, and only one is involved. Nor does rape cover it. Nothing is going on here that I haven't signed up for. There wasn't a lot of choice, but there was some, and this is what I chose. Therefore, I lie still and picture the unseen canopy over my head. I remember Queen Victoria's advice to her daughter, close your eyes and think of England. But this is not England. I wish he would hurry up. Maybe I'm crazy and this is some new kind of therapy. I wish it were true, then I could get better and this would go away. Serena Joy grips my hands as if it is she, not I, who's being fucked, as if she finds it either pleasurable or painful, and the commander fucks with a regular 2-4 marching stroke, on and on, like a tap dripping. He is preoccupied, like a man humming to himself in the shower, without knowing he's humming, like a man who has other things on his mind. It's as if he's somewhere else, waiting for himself to come, drumming his fingers on the table while he waits. There's an impatience in his rhythm now, but isn't this everyone's wet dream, two women at once? They used to say that. Exciting, they used to say. What's going on in this room under Serena Joy's silvery canopy is not exciting. It has nothing to do with passion or love or romance or any of those other notions we used to titillate ourselves with. It has nothing to do with sexual desire, at least for me, and certainly not for Serena. Arousal and orgasm are no longer thought necessary. They would be a symptom of frivolity, merely like jazz garters or beauty spots, superfluous distractions for the light-minded, outdated. It seems odd that women once spent such time and energy reading about such things, thinking about them, worrying about them, writing about them. They are so obviously recreational. This is not recreation, even for the commander. This is serious business. The commander, too, is doing his duty. If I were to open my eyes a slit, I would be able to see him, his not unpleasant face hanging over my torso, with a few strands of his silver hair falling perhaps over his forehead, intent on his inner journey, that place he is hurrying towards, which recedes as in a dream at the same speed with which he approaches it. I would see his open eyes. If he were better looking, would I enjoy this? At least he's an improvement on the previous one, and she talks about that for a moment. Serena Joy, finally, he comes at last with a stifled groan as of relief. Serena Joy, who has been holding her breath, expels it. The commander, who has been propping himself on his elbows away from our combined bodies, doesn't permit himself to sink down into us. He rests a moment, withdraws, recedes, re-zippers. He nods, then turns and leaves the room, closing the door with exaggerated care behind him, as if both of us are his ailing mother. There's something hilarious about this, but I don't dare laugh. Serena Joy lets go of my hands. You can get up now, she says. Get up and get out. She's supposed to have me rest for 10 minutes with my feet on a pillow to improve the chances. This is meant to be a time of silent meditation for her, but she's not in the mood for that. There is loathing in her voice, as if the touch of my flesh sickens and contaminates her. I untangle myself from her body, stand up. The juice of the commander runs down my leg. Before I turn away, I see her straighten her blue skirt, clench her legs together. She continues lying on the bed, gazing up at the canopy above her, stiff and straight as an effigy. Which of us is it worse for, her or me?
And on that note,
yes,
I think we'll take a break.
In a world with a few hearts. from the world we know, up where the clear winds blow. Some hang on to used to be, they live their lives looking behind, when all we have is here and now, all our lives out there to find. The road is long, and there are mountains in our way, but we climb a step every day. Love lift us up where we belong, where the eagles cry on a mountain. Life's you and I alive today. Love lift us up where we belong, where the eagles cry on a mountain high. Love lift us up where we belong, far from the world.
So, Buffy St. Marie, and just to change up the conversation a little bit from the discussion we've been having with Gail and Jim and about freedom to read, we decided on that particular piece of music and Buffy St. Marie for a significant reason, and the very difficult news that happened on Tuesday of this week, and that is the tragic accident near Regina that claims the lives of Michael Green, Michelle Cerita, Narcisse Blood, and Lacey Morin Desjarlais, all incredible people who are part of such a vibrant arts community here in Regina, in Calgary. There have been people all over the world who have commented on their passing, and to the family and friends of every one of them, we extend our heartfelt sympathies. It's just really hard to find words that are adequate on an occasion like this, and we just felt that that would be a appropriate bit of music to play at this point. I don't know, Gail, if you wanted to share anything further about this in terms of...
There is no easy consolation in this, but as I said to you, I saw Michelle Sunday afternoon. She had her theater company, the Curtain Raisers, RAZORS, just to, you know, show you that they really were edgy. And they had produced my friend Kelly Henderick's play, Small Boy Dreams, and it was. I'd seen the play about 3 years ago, And when it first started, and he had worked with Michelle on it in the last weeks, and it was just so much richer and deeper and better and more powerful, and he knew it and we knew it, and the audience was very responsive, and Michelle came out to thank the audience at the end, and she was just glowing, and I think that's the image I'm going to keep is of a woman who has done something, who died after she was doing something she loved, and she had done it well, and I mean it is, as I said, it's not a consolation, but just I will remember always how she looked. She was just so happy and fully alive, you know, many people don't get that in their lives. So, and she had it, and I believe that was true for everyone in that car, that they had that. Mm-hmm. I mean, we wish it could have been more, longer for them, but they did know the joy of doing something they loved and doing it well.
I can recall, and I'll just share this bit of history, my own recollection as well, is just last fall, on October 4th, the curtain raisers were part of the annual October 4th vigil for missing and murdered Indigenous women that was held at the First Nations University. It was a different format. It represented a different format for the vigil because, you know, traditionally there's the traditional feast and then the vigil outside, and then people come back inside for the round dance. And as people were coming back inside, the curtain raisers were set up, and it really, I think, brought a lot more people to the event itself, and it was an amazing performance, and I'll always remember that, you know, because the vigil itself is a difficult time, but I'm glad I have that particular memory. It's difficult for so many family and friends, and we do want to extend our sympathies to all of them. So maybe we come back, I guess, to the conversation we've been having with Gail, our good friend Gail Bowen, who's been sharing information about Freedom to Read Week and the events that we're going to be having here in Regina. The one is Wednesday, February 25th, the downtown branch of the Regina Public Library. And before the break, Gail read from Margaret Atwood's book, The Handmaiden's Tale. It was, you know, I think one of the things I was reflecting on, Gail, as you were reading that particular piece of Margaret Atwood's writing, is the importance of context, and because in itself it's a very difficult piece of reading, you know, awful experience for anyone to read, and then you need the larger picture, and that's what I guess invites people in terms of good writing and a story, and maybe that's one of the things that we need to remember when we question, you know, the authors that you wonder about is maybe there's a reason they've done this and shared some very difficult kind of experiences in their writing, and that's what Margaret Atwood did in the piece that you read.
I think that's a really good point, because I mean, what happens is, you know, what writers are dealing. I mean, you write a book because there's something you want to say, and you can say it in abstractions, and it will. I'll give you an example just from my own work. I'm very concerned, as any sensible, decent human being should be, with the fact that, you know, I live in Lakeview, and, you know, 7 minutes from where I live, there are kids on the street. And and so I have been dealing with that in the Joanne novels lately. And in one of them, and people have really, everyone who's read the book has come up and said to me, I couldn't take that, but it was what Joanne is out. She's living in the warehouse district at that point. She's out running in the morning and with a friend, and there's an SUV goes by, and they throw out what seems just a package or just a, you know, rolled up bunch of blankets or something. And they assume it's garbage. Somebody just too lazy to go to the dumpster. So then they get closer and they hear sort of a mewing sound and they think, well, kittens or something. And they unwrap it and there is a child in there who is Aboriginal child who's maybe 9 or 10. And she has $10 in her hand and she has semen coming out of her mouth. And that is the scene. Everyone says to me, I read that. And first of all, they're horrified. And then they get the point. That happens and it shouldn't. I mean, that's so, so wrong. And I mean, I could write 100 treatises on that and nobody would remember it the way they would remember that scene. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably, you know, why, you know, you get a really strong image like that. And that's why a writer would use it. But denied context, it does mm-hmm. seem just gratuitous, you know, mm-hmm. But I mean, you know, I'm lucky. I mean, I guess because people know me, they figured there was a reason for that particular scene to be, and there really was. I found it very difficult to write. I mean, you know, just because you don't want to think of that. But, and your turn now, sir.
I guess the other piece that I reflect on a little bit is the choices that people have to make were running libraries, you know, why a book is in the young adult section of a library versus the adult section mm-hmm. of a library, all those kind of things. I'm going to give away a little bit of my own, maybe people might discover something about my age here, but, you know, I worked in a library years ago and I was what was referred to at the time as a page, and back then we made 80 cents an hour and we kind of kept the books in order and, you know, but at that point in time, if you were a young adult or child, even a young adult, you could only borrow books from the children's section or the young adult section of the library. You know, that's changed. You could not get a book out of the, adult section. I mean, I recall there were, as a young adult, I actually enjoyed reading some of Bertrand Russell. Mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. that wasn't in the young adult. And I had to find somebody to get it out for me. But, you know,
you were always a wild man, you know, Bertrand Russell. Whoa.
Not, you know, he was one of those peace advocate type people. But, you know, things have changed a little bit, but books are still being challenged and in some cases being banned. And we need to reflect as we're going on. I guess that's really the purpose of the week and what the people who are involved in. I'm glad, by the way, that Regina Public Library puts such an emphasis on organizing an event like this, and other people in the community in terms of authors are participating in it. It's going to be an interesting evening. Mm-hmm. I wanted just to, again, I referred prior to the break to The Shepherd's Granddaughter, and it's by Anne Laurel Carter. I'm actually not going to be reading from that particular book, but I did mention before the break that, you know, it's one of the books that was challenged, and it's in the young adult section of the Regina Public Library. You can borrow it if you like, or probably find it at a local bookstore. There's just a small passage. It's a book about the occupied territories that where Palestinian people live, and it, just a small portion of it. Amini reached the top of the path, surprised to realize she stood on the peak. Above her, the sky was a dazzling white. Near the gully, she found a comfortable spot, facing east, and leaned against the rock, her back to the sun. Then she noticed something. There were small X's painted on the line of rocks in the gully. Her heart tumbled over a sheer cliff. She couldn't breathe. How long had the X's been there? A few hours? Days? The Israelis were going to build a settlement on Cedo's Peak. I've read the book, and as I say, it's in the young adult section, and it was challenged. And to me, when I read the book, it really is one I would recommend to young adults as well, because, you know, obviously there's a significant point of discussion about what's going on in that part of the world. But we need people, you know, not to be afraid of these discussions. And the extent to which, you know, a book is challenged or for that matter banned makes people back away, you know, saying, oh, maybe there's a reason we shouldn't be talking about this. You know, maybe we shouldn't be having the conversation about what's going on in the Middle East, be it in Iraq or Iran or Syria. And maybe we should you know, not have any conversation about this. So that's one of the ones that I'd recommend. That's on the challenge books list, and there's many others. I'm going to be actually reading from a different book. I'm not going to read a portion of it right now. I want to come back to give us. We've got a special guest today, and that's Gail. But I am going to be reading from J.K. Rowling's book, one of her Harry Potter books. You know, and I just share one of the reasons I did pick that. It was Harry Potter was challenged. Mm-hmm. In this case, I wouldn't call it a significant challenge, right? There was a parent in Newfoundland who objected that it would be any Harry Potter book would be in the school library. And the objection raised was, it's all about wizardry and magic, you know. And there are people who would object to that kind of thing. Fortunately, her books circulate well.
Yes.
Are well read. And I think, frankly, it's a good thing because, you know, you think about all the millions of young people who have read her books and the extent to which their curiosity has been extended because of it. And I guess the other reason, frankly, I picked her book is, you know, there's a little bit of other history about J.K. Rowling, and that is that prior to being a famous author, she was a researcher with Amnesty International. She worked on staff at the International Secretariat on the Africa desk, and she, you know, there are, you know, stories she's told about that experience. And shared, you know, her views about the importance of our human rights work. So it's another little bit of context for why I picked that book, I guess. But Gail, I should turn it back to you because the extent to which we've got time in this program, we really want to give you an opportunity to reflect on this.
Well, I was just going to say, just taking your point earlier about the importance of talking about the Palestine Israeli, that what is going on there. I mean, that the only way anyone is ever going to come to any sort of accord there is if we understand each other, if we learn, the more we learn and the more we see that these are people. And this, I came upon this last year, you know, and this has really stuck with me too, that Adolf Hitler's Mein Kampf was challenged and banned from the time of its publication to the height of World War II and beyond. Some historians have speculated that a wider readership prior to Hitler's rise to power, or at least to the outbreak of World War II, might have alerted the world to the dangers Hitler would pose to peace in Europe and to the Holocaust he would pursue. I think that's a really good point to end on. I mean, when you often these can reveal dangers that need to be addressed.
Mm-hmm. So you've got a little bit of news to share, Jim, and thank you much, Gail, for coming out today and sharing news about Freedom for Read Week. I really appreciate this. It's been a great conversation.
Thanks.
Yeah, before we say goodbye here, I just want to let everybody know that the Look and Listen Lottery is back. And
it was on the last time I was here.
Right?
Do you just do this for me?
Well, it's a great way to kick it off. And a slight difference, actually a major difference from last time. I think we've done a New York trip twice in a row. And so they wanted to do something different. So we're going to London, England.
Wow.
Yeah. So the grand prize is a trip for two to London, England, with return airfare for two, four-star hotel for 7 nights, full-day sightseeing tour of London, including Buckingham Palace, a cruise down the River Thames, and more. London Rock Music Tour, including Abbey Road, Paul McCartney's office, Pink Floyd Studios, and more. We got two tickets to Michael Jackson's Thriller musical in the West End, plus $100,000. No.
I'm all right.
Okay.
Sign me up.
Back up. $1,000 cash. $1,000 cash to spend. I got excited there. To spend any way you want. Second prize is a $1,000 travel voucher from Carlson Boggenly Rickert Travel. Third prize, and this is kind of neat too, Regina Folk Festival 2015 experience. Two weekend passes to Regina Folk Festival 2015. And vendor coupons for the food court and arts market.
Wow. Very nice.
So, very nice prizes. And tickets are only $20 each. And we're only going to sell 1,200. The draw date is May 7th. So, you do have some time to get your ticket. But I think you should probably plan on getting it early. Just in case we run out. You never know. There could be a run on these tickets. Mm-hmm. And you can buy them at CJATR's offices. 1102 8th Avenue. This is during regular business hours, of course. Or by calling the radio station at 525-7274 during regular office hours, Monday through Friday. And you can pay by credit card or order your tickets online at lookandlistenlottery@cjtr.ca. That's email, yes. Or call the station. For more information about the rules of play or prizes, go to www.cjtr.ca. That's our exciting news. And, of course, the lottery is an important fundraiser for CJTR. And they've got lots of great programming here run by, you know, very dedicated volunteers. And by supporting the Look and Listen Lottery, you are helping Regina Community Radio.
Cool. Yeah. Fabulous.
So, I think we're done.
Thanks again, Gail. It's just been a wonderful conversation.
It has been wonderful.
No, it has. I've enjoyed it as well. And I think maybe a little light on the subject, too. That was good.
Yeah.
As we close this week's Human Rights Radio on CJTR Community Radio, we hope you've enjoyed listening to and have learned something new about human rights for all people. For information on past and upcoming shows with links to human rights actions and information, go to amnestysaskatchewan.ca. Peter Benenson, the founder of Amnesty International, often said, "It's better to light a candle of hope than to curse the darkness."